This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. The movies this week I'm going to be talking about are Hot Pursuit, Maggie, Welcome to Me, Misery Loves Company, and Roar. Now, that's a real special treat. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But first, we're going to be talking about some news that's probably going to get me in trouble again this week, the trailer park, box office predictions, and, of course, the world-famous DVD roundup. But before we do that, this is how you can get a hold of me. You can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
That's right, Ron Burgundy. I'm going to dive right into the news because there's been a lot of stuff happening, and I'm not going to be talking about sort of the cast of Captain America Civil War or any of the summer movies that are anticipating. I want to hit sort of a grander story that is trickling into various elements of popular movies, particularly right now, and the blowback that they are getting. In particular, the Avengers film, Avengers Age of Ultron. And this ends up happening whenever you get a series as popular as the Avengers, people will embrace it and they'll love it. And then eventually the claws will come out and it will devour itself. And that's a real shame because it's just stupid superhero movies. I mean, some of them are fantastic movies. Some of them are really, really well-made movies, but they aren't just superhero movies after all. They are just movies that are meant to entertain, and they are meant to make a lot of money for the people involved, and that's what they do. And they come from comic books, and I'm a big fan of comic books, but I also understand that comic books, they're essentially kids' stories up until the 80s when they really sort of trying to reach out to adults. But overall, people are getting upset over this stuff to a ridiculous level. In particular, and it has to do with what I'm going to refer to as social media and internet-fueled neo-feminism. Before Avengers even came out, there was a blowback to Jeremy Renner because in an interview he and Chris Evans did, they said, the character of Black Widow, yeah, she's kind of a slut. Oh, yeah, and then Chris Evans like, oh, yeah, she's a total whore. The whole point being is they don't really explicitly spell out if she's been sleeping around through the Avengers, but the fans are reading this into it, and Jeremy Renner's reading it into it. And when he said that, people lost their minds over this. They said, oh, how dare you? This is terrible. It's slut shaming. And it's where you have to sit there and say, well, slow down. Hold on a second. This is a fictional character we're talking about. A fictional character who is an assassin, who has murdered innocent and good people and has actually made the world a worse place due to her actions. And we're getting upset because one of the actors in the movies called her slut. Now, first of all, let me point this out. Jeremy Renner was not calling Scarlett Johansson a slut. And the character of Hawkeye was not calling Black Widow a slut. The actor, in a flippant comment, was kind of saying, yeah, she's kind of a slut, about a character. Well, she kind of is. For that matter, so is Tony Stark. And if you listen to what the character has said in the Captain America sequel and in the Avengers, she's not a woman with the greatest morals, sexual or otherwise. And people have made this comment to me where they say, well, men can do this and they're considered cool, but women are considered sluts and they're shunned and shamed. I'm like, well, first of all, that's not true. I've never heard people in a real pragmatic, real life association say, oh, well, yeah, it's okay for guys to totally sleep around, but not women. It's totally. No, that's a straw man argument that the opposition says. I mean, I'm not talking about somebody who's had several boyfriends or girlfriends over the years. And I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about somebody who just will have sex with anybody or anything that moves. And I know a lot of people who find that behavior kind of unappealing, regardless of whether you're a man or a woman. And if you actually look at superheroes, the male superheroes are just as set up with sexual hangups. They're either sluts themselves. Tony Stark is a slut. And I made that point online and somebody's like, oh, well, you know, they play it off as a joke. I go, no, they actually play it off as a bad character trait in him. That's one of his problems, is he's this damaged individual. They play it off like his alcoholism. Nobody's in the first movie of Iron Man saying, yay, alcoholism, isn't it awesome? That's a character flaw that he overcomes in the second movie when he kind of gets into a monogamous relationship with Pepper Potts. And then if you look at other male superheroes who are considered a bit of a man whores, you've got like Johnny Storm from the Fantastic Four, and that's him not growing up. And he's in fact juxtaposed against like Reed Richards, who's the purest of the pure and doesn't have sex with anybody except Sue Storm. And then you've got like Bruce Wayne, who's a total male slut, but that's his cover. He has to play the playboy so he can be Batman. So you're either that as a male superhero or total virgins like Captain America or Superman or Peter Parker. These are guys. There's many hangups for the men. Slut is turning into the new N-word. Here's the real reason why this generation, in particular this millennial, social media-driven, internet-driven generation, is so upset with slut-shaming, is because they want sex to be completely open and unencumbered and without consequence, and it's not. I'm not saying that you have to be a religious zealot and only have sex with one person, but I'm saying sexual activity does have consequences. And I'm not just talking about disease or pregnancy. I'm talking about emotional consequences. And it does not happen in a vacuum. Like the hippy-dippy generation, you got the Woodstock generation, the free love generation, they didn't care if they were called sluts by the old farts. If you were over 30, they didn't care what your opinion was. This generation cares. Oh, you can't call me a slut. You can. This is like people, guys struggling to be politically correct in the 1990s. I saw this happen when I was in college. And you see this a lot now where there's these guys that are saying, oh, no, I have to give into this neo-feminist online movement because I'll be considered a pig. It's like when they had that big photo leak where you had all these women who had taken nude pictures of themselves and then it got hacked on the internet. And there were a lot of people who said, well, why are you putting up with Jennifer Lawrence? Why are you taking nude pictures of yourself and keeping them on your cell phone? And I heard plenty of people who are trying to be good male feminists say, oh, well, that's not the point. They're allowed to take pictures. I'm like, yeah, they are. But you're a coveted female celebrity and you're putting stuff out there in a very accessible means. This is just bad business. I'm not saying you're a slut because you're taking nude pictures of yourself. You can do that all you want, but you're an idiot if you're going to keep it on your cell phone. I walk around naked in my house all the time. I come take a shower and I walk around trying to find my underwear and the laundry or whatever. And I don't care because no one's out there taking pictures of me naked. And if they do, woe to them and their eyesight. But this whole overreaction of everything is just becoming ridiculous. The same thing happened with Joss Whedon. He was attacked because people were upset that Black Widow was such a damsel in distress character at one point in Avengers Age of Ultron. And I mean, to the point that supposedly he quit Twitter, even though he says he didn't. In this day and age, anybody can say anything with any sort of digital platform, with blogs and Twitter and Facebook. And just because you can do that doesn't mean anyone should be paying attention to you. Now, I just saw something this week where there was this t-shirt that Target was selling, and it's made like a yearbook, and it has pictures of the characters from Star Wars. You know, Han Solo is the most likely to break the rules, and under Princess Leia, it's most likely to be rescued. And this website, Legion of Leia, run by Jenna Bush, went completely bonkers over this. How dare you? This is terrible. We want Leia as a hero, and you shouldn't be marginalized. Have you watched Star Wars? That is her sole purpose in the movie. This was based on the old Saturday morning serials. I'm not talking about the overreaching Star Wars universe where it can be everything. I'm talking about this particular movie, the first film in 1977. She was just to be rescued. That's all she was. And then, of course, this Legion of Leia went and assaulted Target so they take it down. Well, that's great because censorship is terrible unless you suddenly disagree with it. And then censorship is okay. Gender politics is fine. And if you want, you know, say, yeah, we need more female directors and we need a little more power in Hollywood, that's fine. But you're overreacting and you're doing nothing to the cause to not make feminists look like shrill, reactionary, crazy women who have no sense of humor, because that's exactly what you look like. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. You hear that sound? It's time to roll into the trailer park. Really got one that I want to cover. It's Human Centipede 3, final sequence, because it looks like this thing's going to be just as bad as the first two.
Our prison has the highest violence rates, legal and medical costs, than any other institution in the U.S. correctional system. Things will have to change fast. I think I have a solution.
We've got to make a human centipede of our prisoners. They will literally be on their knees begging for your mercy. It's brilliant!
I'm not going to explain what human centipeding is. Go look it up. It's one of these movies. The first one came out when everyone was trying to do the most offensive movie ever. These movies are like modern feminism online. It's just snake eating its tail, and they're getting so ridiculous and that nobody can support them. But this looks, at least they're bringing back Dieter Laser, who's fantastic. He's the best thing in the first Human Centipede. But I have to say, I'm interested in this. Anyways, I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Maggie and Misery Loves Comedy. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, rolling into the movie reviews. The first one I want to talk about is Maggie. We all know Avengers is still going to be rolling through the box office. These other movies are really kind of small potatoes to Avengers, even though that came out last week. But this one is Maggie, and it's opening in limited release. It's also, I believe, you can find it on demand. It's a bit of a dramatic turn for our favorite governor of California. Arnold Schwarzenegger plays a father who has to find his daughter and bring her home after she's been infected with a zombie virus.
I wouldn't normally release someone with this type of infection.
Dad!
I need you to follow the rules here. Quarantine is 8 weeks in. She's probably going to show more signs of aggression and hunger. When that happens, say your goodbyes and get her straight through quarantine.
I was very intrigued by this movie because one of the things that it does, like I said, it has this dramatic turn for Schwarzenegger. And Schwarzenegger's never really tried to do that. I mean, he's tried to do more serious movies. And I remember back in the 90s, he did a movie called Collateral Damage that was still a big action movie. But it was meant to him being more of the everyman instead of the impossibly strong good guy that you saw in the 80s action movies he did. Instead, this really kind of tries to get to the meat of the role. This is not like him trying to recreate the over-the-top action movies. And even with his comeback, which hasn't been very strong, he did movies like The Last Stand, which I enjoyed the heck out of, but nobody else did. But that one was him doing the traditional action movie, but it was still him. He was old in that one because the guy's old. He's getting up there. And then he did a movie, Sabotage, which was terrible, but that was him trying to be uber gritty and overly dramatic. And that one had just not a shred of humor in it. Directed by Suicide Squad director, which doesn't bode well for Suicide Squad, because I think Suicide Squad's going to end up having zero humor in it whatsoever, because David Ayer has no humor in his movies. But Arnold Schwarzenegger, he's trying to do stuff different, which I think is great, because he knows he can't do the young action movies again. I mean, he can do Terminator, and the Terminator has a certain cachet still left for him, and the Expendables, but overall, he's trying to do different things. And in this one, he's going dramatic, and his daughters play by Abigail Breslin. It's got a good cast, and I like the idea in concept. I found it's interesting. The problem is, this movie has been made in the wake of The Walking Dead. And for those who know me and know my tastes in movies and television, I've never been a huge zombie fan just to begin with. I mean, there are some good zombie movies out there, but gosh, zombie movies are so in right now and everybody's doing them. And The Walking Dead, I stopped watching this. I couldn't make it into through the second season. And so I've heard, it gets better, but I don't believe it. The Walking Dead to me is just a bunch of people moping around and occasionally a zombie will show up. It has nothing to do with The Walking Dead. It's the talking not dead people who annoy me. And this movie is obviously influenced by that. It is this overly grim, heavy, dreary look at this zombie apocalypse, which of course, I mean, not like the zombie apocalypse is going to be all fun and games, but this is less about the zombie part and more about just misery. And I'm not into misery porn. I really am not. And these kind of movies just, oh, they wear on me. And while Schwarzenegger, he does a decent job. He's not going to win an Oscar for this, right? He's not going to win any awards. But he works in this movie, and he works as the father, and you can see him actually acting in this movie, and that's kind of cool. He's got Abigail Breslin, who she sometimes is really good and she's sometimes really terrible. But Abigail Breslin is fine in this movie. Oh, look, the actors are fine, but it's just this movie is just boring. It's just dull. 90% of the movie are them just moping around in a farmhouse, wondering what they're going to do with their daughter because she's turning into a zombie. It has an interesting take on the zombie virus. It has an interesting take that you get bitten or you get attacked, and then there's this amount of time you have, and it's a slow deterioration as opposed to something like World War Z, where if you get bitten, I mean, like literally 20 seconds later, you're a zombie. This one has a slow deterioration and a slow descent into zombieism, and that's not even fully explored, because they have this whole scene where she goes off and she meets with friends, and one of them's turning into a zombie, and they're talking about it, but that's kind of squandered for just the misery of the situation, and I'm not a big fan of just misery for the sake of misery, and that's generally why I don't like the zombie movie. Zombie movies just tend to just be just a bunch of dirty humans walking around, just dealing with just the awfulness of life, and I'm not into that. It's not my cup of tea. So while I can appreciate what Schwarzenegger is doing, and while I can appreciate the different take on the zombie movie that we're getting, because it's not this big action-packed violent horror story, it's still not for me. So I'm going to have to say Maggie kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is Misery Loves Comedy. Kevin Pollak profiles various comedians to discover what drives them in their careers.
Is there a way to explain why any of us chooses being the center of attention as a career?
When you're solo up there and you get the laughs, it's like crack cocaine. Rock cocaine.
Comedy is really taking dissatisfaction and discomfort and spinning it.
And let's just hope it doesn't get weird.
They're showing the angst of humanity.
I'm stupid. My life is awful.
It's not for me.
I'll never be funny again.
There has to be something wrong with you.
I've always kind of had a thing for stand-up comedy. I've always liked watching stand-up comics, and I'm fascinated by it because it's such an alluring profession, and everybody thinks they can do it. And you can't. I know comics. I know some comics. And they're all depressing people. They're very funny. But I honestly don't know if I could hang out with comics all that much. If you watch Louis, there's bits in Louis, the TV show with Louis C.K. There's bits and scenes where he's with his comics friends. His friends are also comics. And I generally don't like those because it's such depression and so grim, because these people are just, they hate their lives so much because they're comics, and that's, it comes from misery, and that's kind of what the point of this movie is. Although there's no real focus to it, there's not like it's answering some burning question. It's really just a chance to interview a whole bunch of comedians. Why you do what you do, what's the process. It's a very standard look into the life of comedians kind of movie, and we've seen these before. Whereas like something like the movie Comedian, which starred Jerry Seinfeld, and it was him trying to recreate his whole new set post TV show. That one was very directed at the process, and that was kind of fascinating. And it's not like a profile on somebody like there was the Bill Hicks story I recently saw that came out on DVD a couple years ago. And that one specifically profiles Bill Hicks. And you'll see that whether you got a profile of Carlin or Pryor or somebody like that. This is a profile on why comedians do what they do. But ultimately, it's just an excuse to sit down and interview a bunch of comedians, which is usually fantastic. If you like stand-up comedy and you like comedians, this is a goldmine of material. I mean, it's not, like I said, it's not as focused. Like, The Aristocrats was a movie that interviewed a ton of comedians, and it was just them all telling their version of The Aristocrats joke and talking about its history. So that one had a very direct focus. This doesn't have that focus, but that's okay, because there's some great comedians, and you hear them talk about their craft, and you hear them talk about what drives them and sort of where they get their material and what their background is. So if you have any sort of interest in comedians and you like comedy, you like stand-up comedy in particular, this is a good movie. This is for fans of that genre. Don't expect any sort of giant revelations, but it's just funny to watch because you interview a bunch of funny people who are obsessively trying to get people to laugh, and you will get some very funny things. It's a good movie. It's well made. And, you know, even it doesn't need a lot of focus. It's a spotlight on comedians. I'm going to have to say, Misery Loves Comedy kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Hot Pursuit and Welcome to Me. Because we can. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, continuing on the show, continuing with the movie reviews. Let's hit the big movie, the one big release. There's this other, this D-Train movie that's out with James Marsden and Jack Black. This thing came out of nowhere. I mean, literally the first time I heard about it, I walked by a poster going to another movie. And I'm like, oh, I don't know what that is. And then the next time I heard about it, I was sent an email by the publicist saying, oh, hey, can you share this trailer? It comes out tomorrow. And I'm like, I'm not going to share this. You didn't even give me a chance to ask for a screening of this. Or I'm not going to cover this stupid movie. It's the same people who are releasing Human Centipede, the final sequence. And they won't screen that one. They're having like one New York screening of Human Centipede, and that's it. If you don't live in New York, you're gonna have to go get it on demand or go see it at your local theater. That shows real confidence in the movie. So I'm going to talk about the only other big release this week, which is Hot Pursuit. Reese Witherspoon plays a police officer in charge of escorting a witness to trial, only to go on the run, hunted by assassins and dirty cops.
Do you know who Vicente Cortez is?
Yes, he is the top lieutenant in the cartel.
Tomorrow morning, you will escort our witness to Dallas so she can testify against Cortez.
Mrs. Riva, we have got to get going.
Look at you, you're teeny tiny. You're like a little dog that I can put in my purse.
But Cortez has killed every witness we've had.
You're in danger, ma'am. Everything's gonna be fine.
What about my husband?
You can't stop it!
Everything but your husband's gonna be fine.
Whether you like this movie or not is going to be dependent on your opinion of Sofia Vergara. It reminds me a little bit of the Cars movies, both Cars and Cars 2 from Pixar. Generally, if you didn't like Larry the Cable Guy, you probably didn't like the Cars movies. Now, if either you liked Larry the Cable Guy or you were indifferent to him, you didn't care. My wife, she doesn't think one way or the other. She's not a fan of Larry the Cable Guy, but she doesn't hate him. So she likes the Cars movies. She thinks they're a lot of fun. In fact, I think that's her favorite Pixar movie. But if you didn't like Larry the Cable Guy, you couldn't sit through Cars because it's got Larry the Cable Guy in it. And he's doing his thing. He's all over those movies. And in Hot Pursuit, if you don't like Sofia Vergara and her Jay, oh, yeah, 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 that screeching that she does, I'm playing my hand a little bit as whether I like her or not. If you can't stand that, you're going to hate this movie. I saw the screening of this and I came home. I took my son. He's 12 and he thought it was funny because it's in its essence, it's just a stupid, predictable people on the run kind of movie. PG-13, nothing too offensive, nothing a little bit edgy, but not really. It's total PG-13. It's very standard movie. But I came home and my wife was watching something on the DVR and she hit stop and it goes to the menu. The first thing that was on the list was Modern Family. I said, I'm not watching a Modern Family TV show right now. I can only take so much of Sofia Vergara and I've kind of hit my limit because I still watch Modern Family. Because it's at least something my wife and I can watch. But I'm learning to hate all the characters in Modern Family. And she was the first one that got on my nerves. Because there are two big reasons why guys like Sofia Vergara. Yes, she's an attractive woman, but oh, good Lord. It is like nails on the chalkboard. It is the voice just screaming. And then in this movie, as she does on the show, she doubles down on the obnoxiousness. Because she comes apparently from that school of comedy that the louder and more obnoxious you get, the funnier it is. And it really isn't true. She's just screaming and screeching and yes and yes and yes, the nasally. Ugh, I can't stand that. So when she was on screen, it was awful. It was horrible. And I just wanted to leave the theater. But the thing is, on the flip side, you know, Reese Witherspoon's really cute in the movie. I mean, and it's really odd that she goes from doing movies like The Good Lie last year. She did had The Good Lie. She was in Inherent Vice and she was in Wild. Three attempting to do significant award films. Not all of them were up for awards. The Good Lie kind of disappeared. But it's her trying to do serious movie, and then she comes out with this thing, which is, this is a, sort of something you would have seen in the 80s or the 90s that David Spade and Chris Farley would have been in. You know, and there's nothing against those kind of movies, but this just doesn't seem like what Reese Witherspoon has been gravitating to, and that's fine. I think she had fun with it. She's cute in it. She really has command of the screen. She does a really good job doing the comedy. In particular, there's a scene near the end. She doubles down on her comedic efforts, and it works. Sofia Vergara is just awful. And so when it's just Reese Witherspoon, it's kind of a fun movie. It's a stupid disposable movie. It's totally predictable. It's totally formulaic. There's nothing unique or fresh about this movie, but it's when Reese Witherspoon's there, she's cute and she's fun. When Sofia Vergara there, nails on the chalkboard. But that's me. What's funny is at the end, and this isn't a spoiler, but at the end over the credits, they play bloopers. And that happens a lot, especially with comedies. And I'm watching the bloopers and you're watching Sofia Vergara because, you know, English is not her first language. She comes from Colombia and she speaks Spanish. And so she's constantly struggling with the language. And you don't notice that when you watch movies and TV because they edit around all that. But you're watching her trying to deliver these lines and not get them right because sometimes they're complicated or she's not totally commanding the language. And you see the real Sofia Vergara come out and you see her reacting. And I'm like, well, she's very charming. She's very likable. When she's just being herself, I'm like, actually, I kind of found that last bit during the credits with all the bloopers, I found really kind of charming for her. And there's a scene there where Reese Witherspoon's speaking Spanish and she's feeding her the lines in Spanish and Reese is just blowing them as bad as Sofia Vergara was blowing the English lines. And I'm like, that's very sweet. And their chemistry is better in the bloopers than in the movie itself. But still, I'm going to have to say that Hot Pursuit kind of sucks and it's because of Sofia Vergara. But like I said, if you got two big reasons to like her, you may like this movie.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is Welcome to Me. Stars Kristen Wiig, and she plays an off-kilter woman who wins the lottery and uses her money to fund her own talk show.
Hi, I'm Rich.
Me too. I want a talk show with me as the host.
You want to talk about current events?
No.
What kind of stuff do you want to talk about?
Me. Ooh. How much will that cost?
$15 million.
Oh, and I want to come in on a swan boat.
You're off your meds, you're living in a reservation casino, and you're hosting your own talk show.
It's a new era. $86 million Alice.
This movie feels very half-baked. This feels like there was a great idea that really kind of needed to be workshopped. I'm not a big fan of everybody getting involved in a movie and putting their hands all over it. But sometimes that's how you got to do a movie. That's sometimes how you get to do comedy. And in particular, screwball kind of comedies sometimes benefit from having more people in the writing staff. If you look at like Blazing Saddles, at the time in the 1974 when it came out, it had the longest list of official writing credits of any movie at the time that was allowed by the WGA. Comedy sometimes requires that. And Welcome to Me could have used that a little bit. I mean, there's nothing about the movie that makes me point and scream, that's terrible. But there's also nothing that makes me look at the movie and point and say, that's a brilliant movie. Part of it, I think it might be just Kristen Wiig not being able to pick the right movies. I don't know what her end game is, and I don't know what her strategy is, but she kind of blew up when she did Bridesmaids. That put her on the map. And then suddenly she started getting starring roles. But all of her starring roles they're not at all like Bridesmaids. They're movies like Welcome to Me. They're movies like Girl Most Likely. They're movies like The Skeleton Twins. This is a great companion to Misery Loves Comedy because it's her finding the misery in all of these characters and the misery is there. Now this film itself, she sort of wallows in her misery and wallows in her quirkiness and I only have so much patience for that because, again, it just feels like I've seen this character before. And this isn't even, I'm not talking about some Saturday Night Live bit that she's done. It's essentially the character from The Skeleton Twins, only just in a slightly different context. I guess as an actor, she's finding that's where she can find the emotional drama and the acting, you know, juice. But it's trying to be kind of like a Being There or a Forrest Gump kind of thing where you get this damaged person. And in the movie, she's got borderline personality disorder and she wins this lottery and kind of people take advantage of her. But there's real no real impact to that. She does these things and it kind of can work out okay, but she's really a screwed up character. And nothing really ever gets resolved. I don't know. This movie just was kind of halfway through everything. So I'm going to have to say that Welcome to Me kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
I need to go to a break. When I come back, we're going to be talking about Roar and the box office and, of course, the world-famous DVD Roundup. Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr finishing up the show with Fat Guys at the Movies. We got one final segment to talk about. Please don't go anywhere because this next movie I want to talk about is all sorts of brilliance wrapped up in insanity. This is Roar. Drafthouse Films found this movie and it came out in 1981 originally. And it was one of these films that got released in, I don't know, it had like $15 million budget, which was huge in 1981. And it only made like a couple million. And it was released and it went nowhere. No, it's not a good movie. I'm just going to start by saying that. But what they did is they found it and they're re-releasing it because it has this fascinating film in its own right. And the background of it is Tippi Hedren and her husband at the time, Noah Marshall, found this house in Africa that was overrun with all these lions living there, all these jungle cats living there. And so they thought, well, why don't we make a movie here? It'd be a great place to do a movie. And so they shot this movie with real lions and tigers and elephants and cheetahs and panthers. The marketing on this movie basically says, as it's being re-released, because Drafthouse Film found, kind of like how they found Miami Connection. Miami Connection was just this crappy drug dealer movie that was trying to be Miami Vice. And it's terrible. It's an awful movie. And if you saw it in the 80s, it just would have been an awful movie. But it's like an artifact buried in the desert. And then you uncover it 30 years later and you're like, this is kind of amazing. It's absolute camp. And Miami Connection was like that. And that's what Drafthouse Film re-released it. And it did to great acclaim and a lot of fun. And this is essentially what they did with Roar. They found this movie and they're like, this is kind of an amazing story. And the whole thing is no animal was harmed in, you know, in the making of the film. But like 70 injuries happened to crew. I mean, the people like Melanie Griffith's in this movie because she's Tippi Hedren's daughter. And she got bitten in the face and she had to get facial reconstruction surgery. Tippi Hedren broke her leg. Noah Marshall, like, he got injured and got gangrene. He almost lost a leg in this movie. Jan de Bont is the cinematographer and he was injured. So many people were injured in this movie, but none of the animals were. That's the background. So play the trailer here. In this movie, Tippi Hedren and her real-life daughter, Melanie Griffith, play part of a family that's trapped in a house overrun by jungle cats.
Now the clouds have all rolled off. Here we are in Eden.
This is a madhouse.
No, it is. It's just like life. You get the funny with the tragic.
But you will get killed.
The cat's got a little excited. That's all.
Oh. Why did you bring us here? We're just gonna die.
Roar.
And do you know what your friends are probably doing to our family right now? They are eating.
Shut up.
I had heard about this movie and I knew about its infamy, and then I got a chance to see it relatively cold, not knowing anything about it. And it's not a good movie. It's in terms of plot and writing, it's terrible. And in fact, in the opening credits, they have this title card comes up that says, well, these are wild animals and they just kind of do what they want to. So we're going to give them a writing and directing credit as well. And this movie absolutely, totally feels like it was directed by wild animals and written by wild animals. It makes no sense. And Noah Marshall plays the husband in this movie, and he lives in this house with all these cats. And basically, the way he trains them, he just runs around going, just running and yelling at them and tackling them. That's how he bonds with these animals. No wonder people could possibly go wrong. No wonder people were injured on this movie. And the whole story is that he lives here with all these jungle cats. I mean, he has like tigers there in Africa. It makes no sense. Their poachers are coming after him, and then he goes off to, I don't know, do something. His family's coming. They're coming to visit, his wife and three kids, daughter and two sons. And it's played by Tippi Hedren, Melanie Griffith, and Noah Marshall's two sons. So they're just like a family home movie. And he goes off to do something. I don't know how far away. I mean, hundreds of miles away or something. When they're due there, and they show up at the house, and they're like, oh, hey, what's going on? Oh, my God, there's cats! And then it's like literally an hour of them running from room to room and being chased up the stairs, down the stairs. At one point, everyone literally manages to lock themselves in a different cabinet in the house and get trapped. It's absolute chaos, but it's fascinating to watch. It is this glorious train wreck, and it is the Miami Connection of jungle cat movies. This is the equivalent of an insane person in a mental institution throwing feces against the wall and eating flies and writing a script. It's just terrible, but you can't not watch it. But what's so hilarious about it is at the end of the movie, it has this conservation message where it's like, oh, these animals need to be protected, blah, blah, blah. The call to action you get on every conservation movie. This movie just makes it look like a horror film. This would be the equivalent of making Jaws in 1975. And then at the end of Jaws, have a thing that says, we really need to save these sharks because they're being killed. Well, you just literally spent 2 hours showing me what monsters these sharks are, and they're going to eat people alive, and they kill the shark at the end of Jaws, and then have a conservation message at the end. So this movie, I mean, these lions are played as horror elements. There's no pragmatic sense being made in this movie. It's a glorious train wreck, but it's a lot of fun. And it is one of those movies to go to the theater with your friends, have a few beers, and to have fun watching it, because it's amazing they made this movie. Yeah, Roar. It's terrible, but boy, it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Last week, was I correct? I predicted $210 million for Avengers Age of Ultron. Now, there are some people predicting over $220 million. It didn't get there. Early estimates were $188 million, which is nothing to sneeze at, by the way. $188 million over opening weekend is still fantastic. It's the second highest opening weekend ever, second only to the Avengers. But it did not crack the $200 million barrier. Which was the thing. Now, when the actuals came in, it was over $190 million. Now, a lot of people were saying that the Floyd Mayweather fight, the pay-per-view fight on Saturday, impacted it. I actually don't think it had as much to do with the fight as much as the reviews were middling. And it's a lot of people would say, well, these movies are critic-proof. Well, they're critic-proof for that $150, $160 million opening weekend. But part of, I think, what drove the Avengers was great word of mouth. And not just critics, but I know other people. The Avengers Age of Ultron did not have the good word of mouth that the first movie did. And I think that impacted the box office. I think if this movie was as good and as fresh and as perfect as the first one was, it would have made over $200 million. But there is a sort of a wind taken out of the sails just a little bit. Still, nothing to sneeze at. Because let's put this in perspective. Going into this weekend, Avengers Age of Ultron has made more money than any of the standalone films in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Aside from Captain America 2 and the Iron Man movies. And by the time you are listening to this, because we're in the middle of the cycle, it will have beat everything, including Captain America 2, and it's going to be approaching the Iron Man movies just within 2 weeks. There's still a massive, massive box office. So this is still a bona fide hit, no matter how you look at it. So nobody should be weeping that Avengers didn't get to $200 million. It's going to be fine. We don't have to start having a bake sale for Disney. This weekend, it's going to still win. It's going to win the box office. I think it's going to have a higher drop-off. I don't think it's going to get, you know, like it the first Avengers not only didn't make $200 million its first weekend, it was the only movie ever to make $100 million its second weekend. It's not going to do that. It's going to probably be about $80 million. I think it's a little more front-loaded, being a sequel, being the just the average person kind of having a lukewarm reaction to it. And but you know, hey, it's still leading into Captain America Civil War, which is going to lead off next summer and is going to be a huge hit. So, yeah, it's going to be $80 million for Avengers. Hot Pursuit, I don't know. Hot Pursuit is probably good for 30-some million, maybe. It's, again, good counter-programming. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the world-famous DVD Roundup. Couple good movies this week. We've got Selma, which is a fantastic movie about Martin Luther King and his work in Selma, Alabama, in particular. It's kind of a biopic. It's not a real biopic because it doesn't go from his beginning of his life all the way through the end. It's just about Selma. But it's a fantastic movie. Got really snubbed at the awards season, and that's a shame. There's also Black Sea, which isn't a bad movie with Jude Law playing a submarine worker who's trying to find gold at the bottom of the Black Sea. Literally under the Russian Navy. Mr. Turner, another award film, which looks beautiful. Cinematography by the legendary Dick Poop. Yes, I'm still saying that because I'm immature. It's a boring movie. I wasn't wild about the movie, but it looks beautiful. But that's just me. It's Victorian art. Black and White, which is not good. That's Kevin Costner's film about the grandfather trying to get custody of his mixed race granddaughter. And then there's Parenthood Season 6 and the entire series. You can now get the entire series in a box set. So if you're a big fan of Parenthood, check that one out. And then, of course, White Collar Season 6 is out. Find out what really happened to Neil Caffrey. And then finally, 50 Shades of Grey is one of those that's getting released between the frame. So it's available now. You can get it now. It released on May 8th. And it's the unrated version. If you, of course, need to spice up your weekend, you can go get 50 Shades of Grey, which isn't terrible, surprisingly. The stinker of the week is The Pyramid, simply because it's coming out with no fanfare in the theatrical release, no fanfare in the home video release. It's found footage, pyramid under Egypt and monsters. It looks terrible. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Mad Max, Fury Road, and Pitch Perfect 2. And that's it for me. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.